Welcome to the REI Diamonds Show with Dan Breslin, your source for real estate investment jewels of wisdom.
Welcome to the REI Diamond Show. I'm your host, Dan Breslin, and this is episode 152 on being a professional passive investor with Dr. Jeff Anzalone. Dr. Jeff is the author behind the popular blog, DebtFreeDoctor.com, a full-time periodontist, and a syndicator and passive investor in multifamily investment deals. This episode will be perfect whether you are a passive professional investor investing in other people's deals, or you are an operator slash flipper slash real estate investor who is seeking passive investment from private lenders, because it provides you a glimpse behind the scenes on how the deals work and how the passive investor thinks about the potential investment. Shall we get started? All right. Dr. Jeff Anzalone, welcome to the REI Diamond Show. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great, Dan. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. I appreciate you blocking out the distractions and taking the time to accept our invite here. I know a busy guy like yourself is kind of big to give us this kind of time, so I really appreciate that. Just want to kind of start off with that. We have guests from all over the nation, so I usually start off with a little bit of geographic context and talk about the weather. We got Chicago where I am. It's cold and sunny, but where in the U.S., I assume, are you recording from today, Jeff?
I am recording from the great state of Louisiana. Go Tigers. And it is about 60 degrees. It is sunny and absolutely gorgeous outside.
Nice. Is that what's expected all year round in that area, 60s, or is it
for about 3 weeks? Other than that, it's usually pretty hot and muggy in the summers and pretty mild in the winters. But for the most part, right now, this is fantastic weather.
Gotcha. So people who do not know about the Debt-Free Doctor, do you want to give a little bit of background about what you did and kind of how you came into real estate and maybe what your business sort of looks like today, Jeff?
Absolutely. I'm a full-time practicing periodontist down in Louisiana. And about two and a half years ago, I decided to start a blog, didn't have a clue how to do it. Being from Louisiana, a redneck, the only thing that I knew how to do was pretty much turn a computer on. So I taught myself, took a course, then I taught myself how to start a blog, which is really not that hard. And what I wanted to do was basically share with other dentists and physicians, healthcare providers, all the mistakes that I had made regarding finance and business. We got into a lot of student loan debt, close to $300,000. And I wanted to kind of lay that out there to hopefully people wouldn't make the same mistakes. And then at that time, the only thing that I was investing in was the stock market, mainly mutual funds, index funds, that sort of thing. So basically, you know, the person getting out of school or training, this was, you know, kind of the younger person. This was for them, and that was it. Where I had come up with that idea was about 2 weeks before I finished my training at LSU. The job offer that I had on the table, they kind of got pulled out from under me. So we had, you know, a two-month-old. We had purchased a home interest only at the time. Like I said, had close to $300,000 of student loan debt, but the worst part was I had no clue how to start a business, run a practice, nothing. So I, you know, networked with a lot of people, and during that process of me learning a lot, I was able to write down a lot of stuff, wrote my first book, What They Don't Teach You in Dental School. And at that point, when I started doing that, I realized I really like to educate and teach people, help people along the way. So when this idea came up with the blog, debtfreedr.com, that was a really cool thing. But after doing it a while, I started dabbling a little bit into real estate. And at first I thought the only way that you could invest in real estate was to be an active investor. So I started reading about it, learning about it, networking with people, actually looked at a couple of single family homes with people. But the reason why I wanted to do all that was I did not have any other streams of income coming in except my, you know, what was coming in from the practice, just active income. And, you know, I started kind of getting worried, you know, something happened to me. What about who's going to take care of my family? And then also, I really couldn't take a whole lot of time off. You know, if I wanted to take 4 or 6 weeks off in the summer with my kids, I really couldn't afford for my practice to be closed that long because, again, I practice by myself. So the first place that I started with, you know, possibly getting passive income was real estate. But after I spoke with several of my friends here that are active investors, they do that full time, and learning what was involved, I quickly realized that I did not want to be a landlord. And that would just take up more time. And I was trying to acquire more time to spend with my family, and that was going the opposite direction. So I found something called crowdfunding, and I dabbled in that a little bit with a patch of land, and which used to be at another website called Realty Shares, which has been taken over. You may or may not know that, but in the Realty Shares, I did my first equity deal. It was an apartment complex in Tulsa, Oklahoma. And long story short, after 2 years of not getting any distributions, the whole deal went under and every investor lost all of their money, including myself.
Wow.
Yeah. And I actually wrote an article about it, and it really opened my eyes to make me realize that I didn't know what I was doing then. I was trying to do everything on my own. And so I kind of took a step back. I started going to meetings. I started personally meeting with the operators, with the sponsors, instead of relying on a website, because on the Realty Shares website, they were telling everybody, you know, how many deals that they get every month. You know, we get hundreds of deals a month and we only put up just a handful. We handpick and the best ones go on our website. Well, you know, there's all these different sponsors of deals. So I scratched that idea and I started meeting with people, networking with people. And now I've been doing this for about 4 years now and have had really good success. And that's just from building trust with people. So what I'm doing now with my website is taking all the information and knowledge that I'm learning and a lot of the things that I'm learning from deals and then providing it for people so that they know how to develop passive income streams.
Nice. Yeah, I am sorry to hear about the Oklahoma deal going bust. That's screwed up, man. That's not a good thing at all. It's ironic. I've been in the business since 2006, single family houses. We did 223 houses last year. So we're like a high volume operation, a lot of partners, very, very business like environment as opposed to kind of, you know, side income, side stream. I think that's what worked for us. All that said, I was not a professional. I didn't have a successful career. I, you know, dropped out of college after about a year and a half of engineering school. So I had nothing to fall back on. I had to build the real estate business. And that is, I mean, it's my practice, although I'm not like an agent and I'm not like a professional, but you know, the way you have your practice and your business, I have my, you know, real estate business. And I mean, it's probably taken me, I mean, we're what, 16 years in or something like that as we speak here in 2020. And there's a lot of these like lessons that just became glaringly obvious to me, you know, a few years in. And I saw these things. I share all that, you know, that perspective on my experience and having been in the business a long time. But I remember when the patch of land and the Realty Shares and all those other ones were coming out, and I'm like, I kind of looked at them from my point of view, like, oh, maybe I would be an operator on there. And then it just seemed like a very difficult thing to analyze other people's deals. And especially being in a business since 2006, I've seen interest cycles and economic cycles go, you know, very violently down, come up slowly, gyrate as interest rates go up. I also invest in the stock market, so I see that the emotions and the things that change in the stock market, and that works in real estate as well. But I think a lot of operators in the real estate multifamily space especially, or a lot of these operators, I think that they don't have the frame of mind or the perspective of what took place like in 2000, you know, 7, 8, 9, 10. Probably also happened in like 1989, 90, 91, the savings and loan crisis. And I think people are probably blind to some of that risk. And, you know, I don't know about anyone on those realty shares things, but one of the biggest takeaways of our show that so far you've already said was meeting the sponsor, getting face to face, sitting down with the general partner, certainly hopping on a phone call and being able to vet them, do some due diligence on them. You know, kind of dig in. Do you have any deeper, you know, conversation, tactics, techniques, red flags that if an operator said this, you'd be scared off versus an operator said this other thing? And, you know, I saw these experiences unfold. Like, how do you go about vetting these general partners and operators now, Jeff?
That's a good question. And there's ample information out on the web that I've kind of picked and choose. You know, people have checklists or, you know, hey, this is all the different questions you should ask a potential operator. One of the things that I like to do, just like if I'm going to be, you know, hiring maybe like a marketing company or if I'm looking to do something like that for my practice, I will ask some of their, you know, people that they've done business with, and you know, in the sponsor's case, people that they've done deals with, and then, you know, not just one or two, I mean, as many as I can find. And I do that a lot and just ask them about the experience being with them, how much communication do they provide? Are they easily acceptable? So if you email them, you know, do they get back with you, you know, within a reasonable amount of time, like 24-hour period, or is it like a week? You know, have they ever missed a distribution? You know, different things like that. So that's probably one of my biggest things that, you know, a lot of times people don't think about, but really talk to people that they've worked with.
Yeah, I think that's definitely a great idea. I think that some people – especially if we're coming from like the, you know, the E-Trade or the TD world where it's like click a button and you've thrown $25,000 into the market at the snap of a finger. Sometimes it can be, I think, enticing for certain people who are getting ready to passively invest in a deal to maybe not want to hop on the phone. Maybe they want to hop on the phone. Maybe they're not sure if that's the norm or not, coming from more of a passive stock market type investment paradigm. But then actually digging into the details and asking for a couple referrals of people maybe that they have lent money to, done business with, depending on the context, and then actually calling them. So I know that, like, you know, vetting tenants for landlords can be like the same way. It's like, you know, a good landlord who's going to be very hands-on, detail-oriented, and who's going to have his portfolio performing at maximum value, maximum ROI. Like they're walking outside and they're checking out the car of the tenant, kind of like, you know, not like obviously, but meeting them out in the street there so they could take a look in the car. And is the car full of crap like McDonald's wrappers and just junk in there? Or is the car like nice and well kept? Cause they're probably going to keep their apartment unit or house unit in similarly clean or not clean condition. Are they calling the employers of their potential tenant? Are they, calling previous landlords is probably not too revealing, but I think it all comes down to, like, some people are lazy when they invest their money, and it sounds like you are more diligent there, and that's like kind of a hats off to you. It's funny. I have quite a few of my own private investors who invest in our deals, are doctors, and I also have like quite a few friends who are doctors. And you mentioned something early on that, like, you know, I think it was in dental school, they really didn't teach you about the business of being a dentist. And I've seen a lot of other people kind of be blindsided and tell the same story, and they've, like, you know, cut their way through the jungle of building their own business and their own practice and, like, finding their way. Would you mind touching on that? Maybe there was some big enlightening places where you gained knowledge for building your own dental practice once you kind of, you know, had the lifeboats burnt and no return in the 2-month-old?
I couldn't have done it without other people. I networked with people. I had another dental specialist reach out to me. And if he would have reached out to me, I would have just started going around and asking people, hey, do you have space that I could rent from you, learn from you? And you'll wind up finding somebody out there that's willing to help. I guarantee you, because there's probably somebody out there just like this guy had kind of the same thing happen to him, and that was why he was wanting to reach out and help me a little bit. So, you know, I don't know if you ever heard the story about the injured bricklayer, but if you just Google it, the injured bricklayer, never do the job alone. It's a funny little story, but it just really stresses the point of anything really major that you're going through in your life, you know, don't try to do it alone, you know. Like it says in the Bible, surround yourself with good counsel, with good advisors. That's one of the Proverbs. It's one of the wise sayings, whether you're a believer or not. But that would be probably my number one thing to do. Also, whenever you're in professional school, a lot of times they have some professional development classes where they'll have outside people come in to speak. And I would encourage you, if you find somebody that comes in and speaks and you like them, maybe get their contact information and you know, have kind of a Rolodex amount of people like that you could, you know, you kind of set up as your mentors. You know, moving forward, you're going to have questions along the way when you're building your business, building your practice. Hey, you know, how do I hire somebody? Or What do I do regarding this issue? So that would be something where you could, you know, contact them. So I think, you know, kind of building a group around you to help you, support you, that would probably be my best advice.
Nice. You said one of the Proverbs, surrounding yourself with good counsel. I had a mentor of mine years ago tell me that, yeah, whether you're a believer or not, the book of Proverbs is basically in the Bible. It's like a business book, and there's like lessons in there for building a business. And at first I'm like in one ear, out the other. You know, at the time I didn't commit myself to God like I have in the past 9 years of my life. So I heard that. And by the time I did follow up on that advice, he said, listen, if you read the book of Proverbs, you read one chapter per day. So if we're on the 28th day of the month, you read chapter 28. And if you're on the third day of the month, you read chapter 3. And if you miss a day, it's fine. If you got time, you read and catch up. But, or you could just start on that date again and you read it repetitively month after month, year after year. And if you do that for 5 years and you write down your revelations and your ideas that you get as they apply to life, but at the end of 5 years, you'll be a millionaire. And he was told the same thing from his mentor, and he was multimillionaire in 2 or 3 years, and it took me about 3 years, and I didn't do it every day, and I was a millionaire, and I was amazed at how much of that pertinent, you know, biblical, godly advice, godly wisdom passed down from the heavens is actually applicable still today, even to this day. Is there's so much I find that applies. So that's something I figured I'd tuck in there and share. So, Jeff, you did mention the $300K in debt. I imagine a lot of doctors who have made those kind of sacrifices and commitments along with the time to get themselves to the place where they're a professional, and then they turn around and maybe they start at the job or they're starting at the practice. I mean, what's the plan? How do you actually pay that off? How do you dig out? Like, what's the time horizon to actually get out from underneath of the debt after medical school?
I'm very, very lucky and blessed that while I was in my training, I was listening to talk radio one day, and I came across a guy by the name of Dave Ramsey. So I really focus in so much with him because, you know, during my training, I thought I had a job. So I was like, hey, I'm going to get out. I'm going to be making a pretty decent income. I'm going to be able to pay back these loans no problem. So, you know, I was listening a little bit and, you know, listen to the conversations and the callers. But, you know, he was kind of saying the same thing. And I think because he was telling the callers the same thing over and over again, you know, regarding the debt snowball, it sunk in. So when I did have to really, you know, I went from very complacent, finished my training, job fell through, to it was like literally the flip of a switch. We went into survival mode. And I thought about it, and that was a mindset shift. I started thinking about money completely differently. And it took me a while, it took me years and years to get over the fear that, and I still kind of have it in the back of my mind, fear of loss. How, I mean, life is so precious and how just fragile things can be taken away from you just like that. So, and I think that with listening to him and I just took his philosophy. And I had like six or seven different student loans, some of them private, some of them public, federal. And I just started with the smallest one and threw all the money I could early on, paid it off. And then, you know, and just kept going down the line until, you know, by the time you're paying off your last loan, you're throwing a good chunk of change every month. I mean, it's really picks up momentum. So, I committed to do that. Now, depending on who you talk to, some people would say, oh, well, you know, student loan rates are so low. You know, I'm just going to pay the minimum and I'm going to invest the difference. And, you know, it just depends on the person. Your risk tolerance, you know, at that point I'd never really had any debt. I've never had any debt before. So I just didn't like that. You know, it's a little bit different than having a mortgage. Well, at least you have a, you know, something physical, a house. That goes along with that, but you know, student loan, it's just, hey, you know, I can sell my house and get some money back with a student loan. I can't sell anything, you know, that's it. So, I really just wanted to get that monkey off my back and I did, and I'm glad I did.
Yeah. I mean, I never thought about it that way. How you have the house and you can sell the house or the asset and then pay off the debt. Throwing all the money you can at the chunks of debt. I'm sure it was satisfying when you finally paid all that off. You talked about the momentum. Can you give any examples of like where the momentum came from? Was it like all of a sudden you started having, you know, new business ideas or the practice, you know, increased or like as maybe all of us are gaining an experience and progressing through our careers, we're making a little more money. Like where did those extra chunks come from as you started getting kind of toward the end? I'm sure they felt better and better as you're throwing those chunks of cash to get rid of that debt as well. But can you kind of like shed a little light on that?
Yeah, the momentum came from, I guess, a couple of things. Number one, you know, let's just say I was paying $1,000 a month with the loan and then I was paying minimums on everything else. Well, after I finished with that loan, well, then I could take that $1,000 I was paying and apply it to the next loan. And then, you know, let's say the next one was $2,000 and then you could take $2,000 extra a month and apply it to the next one. So you get the momentum from paying off your loans. Plus also I was getting the momentum from my business growing because I started from nothing. So it can only go up, you know, when you start from ground zero. But another thing that I didn't mention that I made, you know, I kind of went against the Dave Ramsey way. You know, he's all about paying off all of your debt, consumer debt, before you start investing. I did it a little bit differently because I felt that I was disciplined enough where I could do both, invest and pay off aggressively loans because, you know, I started making a pretty decent income. I did not want to miss out on all those years of compound interest, you know, to do that. So, you know, I had we started a practice retirement account, retirement fund that for both my wife and I. So we were maxing that out every year, some 529 plans for our kids. And then everything else was paying on the student loan. So looking back over that 7-year period, I'm glad we did that because, we probably wouldn't be as good a financial position as we are now had we not done that, I believe.
Yeah, I think that's smart. I think it shows your self-awareness of the discipline that's there, and you're able to still kind of work both of those courses simultaneously. One of my mentors kind of said the same thing. You know, Dave Ramsey had some great ideas, and I applied that to, like, knock down a bunch of credit card debt at one point in time. But he was like, hey, listen, don't follow that all, like, completely explicitly. Like, you're going to need to borrow money to buy these houses and these buildings that you want. So, like, the completely anti-debt method and philosophy to have, like, zero debt across the board 100%, like, that doesn't apply to us real estate investors who are a little more hands-on owning property, raising capital, et cetera. So you're going to need to, like, mentally be comfortable, damn, with a little bit of debt. That's how my mentor had told me along the way. Do you actually own some real estate? I mean, I assume you own your own house. Do you actually have any, like, rental properties, or maybe own a property where the practice is, or any other, or is it strictly passive investments in other people's larger deals?
I do own my house, and I own the building that I practice in, but everything else I own are in multifamily syndications, basically, other people's deals.
Nice. And then I remember wanting to ask you if you had any advice for other people who would be in your shoes, doctors, high income earners, whatever it is, but investing in a method, or maybe you got some advice on, like, minimizing or lowering taxes overall. Is that something you could touch on?
I would, if I could do it all over again, I jumped on the first accountant that I interviewed way back when, had him for 10, 12 years. Then he wound up retiring, and when I switched to my new accountant, and I saw the difference, and it just kind of made me sick at all the extra taxes I'd paid the first 10 to 12 years of my practice. So I would strongly recommend that somebody interviews at least four to five accountants. Ask around, if you're a dentist or an attorney or engineer, whatever, you know, talk to other successful people that are in your profession and start writing down which names keep coming up. And I did that. But again, don't just do one. Do stuff because, you know, you may click with one and not the other, but you may like what other people, you know, one says and not the other. So you kind of need to go into those meetings knowing what you are wanting to try to do. So maybe some specifics. So, kind of have that stuff written down and then interview those people. So that would probably be my best piece of advice, because you're going to pay a boatload of taxes, as you well aware, over your career. So if you can find somebody to help you to be creative and to pay the least amount of tax you legally can, that's probably going to be one of your biggest things that's going to help you with that.
Do your investments in the multifamily operators currently have any tax benefits for you making that investment?
I did do a self-directed IRA. That was the first time I took some money out of a traditional IRA and did a self-directed, and I invested in a syndication. But what I really like is all of the monthly distributions that I receive from my investments, they're all tax-free, basically from the depreciation offsets the income. So that's really cool, getting all these checks every month and not having to pay any taxes on them. So that in itself right there is a really cool deal.
Yeah, that's why I personally put up with the headache of owning the handful of rental properties that I've accumulated over the years, is that depreciation on the tax return is a very satisfying line item
yeah,
to take
exactly.
That, you know, paper loss. So So what's a good investment to you, Dr. Jeff? I mean, if someone brought a deal to you, or maybe you'd want to talk about kind of the specifics of one that you just saw. I mean, is there like a rate of return? Is there an upside? They're going to, you know, return capital in a certain period. What would be like the ideal perfect scenario for you to invest?
What I've typically invested in is, and I'm more familiar with, you know, multifamily, so apartment complexes. I am getting ready to do my first hotel deal syndication, but all of them typically have about a 5 to 6 year hold period. All of them are paying monthly distribution, typically about a 7-8% annual return. And then after the 5 or 6 year hold period, most of them are either a 70-30 or 80-20% profit split. You know, 80% goes to the investors, 20% goes to the operators. I'm currently right now not needing the distribution. So what I do is I have a separate checking account that all of the distributions from all my deals go back into. And then as that accumulates to the point where then I can go in and purchase another investment, which the majority of the ones that I'm in are a minimum for accredited investors only. Usually it's about a $50,000 minimum investment. So once I hit 50, then I really start looking, you know, at the market. I've networked with several operators that I invest with. So they usually keep me abreast of the deals that are coming up. And then I have a little group on my website called the Passive Investor Circle that I will share those deals with. So I kind of sort through the ones that I like, and then if they're in that group, then I will pass those along to people. So I'm kind of vetting people, going through the stuff, doing the legwork for the people that are in my group, so they don't have to worry about dealing with all that stuff.
That's interesting. So the Passive Investor Circle, this little network you have, do you take a management piece or some ownership stake, or is it kind of like, you know, it's on them to take the email that you send out or the info and re-vet, you know, the operator on their own? Like, what level of involvement or responsibility would you have in somebody investing in one of those deals who is in your network?
To join the Passive Investor Circle, there's no charge or anything. There's no fee. When you join, I typically will reach out to you, have a conversation with you, find out what some of your financial goals are, and really just answer questions about the syndications and what's involved. Sometimes I'll talk with people and I don't think it's right for them, even though they're accredited. I spoke to a dentist a couple months ago. And after we talked, he had over $1 million in debt in various things, including practice loans. Yeah. And he wanted to get into real estate. I said, that's great. That's great that you're thinking about it. But to be honest with you, I just don't think it's right time for you right now. I'm just being honest with you. I went through the Dave Ramsey financial coach training. I was certified as a coach, not to coach people, but to learn how to look at, you know, everything as a whole, in order to guide somebody ethically what they should and should not do. And in this case, I did not recommend that he move forward with that.
Gotcha. So you're hopping on a call. You're actually syndicating these funds that come through the Passive Investors Circle then, right?
Right. So what I do if I offer a deal, I have a part in it. Usually the sponsors will make me a general partner on their side. So I do all the investor relations. I do the calls. I do the emails. I handle all that for them. So in return, if someone were to invest with them, the general partner gives me a small percentage of the share of the deal. But the person investing, you know, they don't have to pay any fees or anything, any extra fees or anything like that. To do that.
Gotcha. Man, you're still a full-time periodontist also?
Yeah, absolutely.
How do you fit it all in?
I am pretty diligent about time management. So I, it's amazing when you, and I've always heard this, to be honest with you, Dan, but I've never believed it until about the last year or so. I've always heard people go, man, if you could find something that you love and you're passionate about, it's not work. It's not a job. You'll wake up and you'll love it doing it. And I'm like, there's no way. There's nothing out there like that. I don't believe it. And then now that I've found this, it's true. I mean, I could talk about this stuff all day long. I love it. I love helping people. I love educating people to show them that, hey, there's ways out there that you can retire earlier if you want to. You don't have to have what they tell us, you know, $5 million, $7 million, $10 million saved up in order to retire or worry about your money running out. If you learn how to do things properly, it's much, much less than that. And when I tell people that, it's just like they light up. Like, you mean I don't have to see patients until I'm 80 years old and can't physically work anymore, you know? So, it's a really cool shift to be able to teach that to people. So I really love that part of the job.
So you, me, and the REI Diamond Show listeners will keep it a secret from all your patients about how you don't derive the same joy as you do from real estate with dealing with them.
I didn't say that. You said that.
Fair enough. We'll read between the lines, but that's pretty cool. So did I hear somewhere, I don't remember if I saw it on your blog or someone mentioned on one of the other shows you were a guest, what was the deal with, like, you looking for a job at Disney or something like that?
I was going to Orlando for a meeting a few years ago, and a friend of mine said, hey, Jeff, if you really want to improve your business, improve your practice, then I highly recommend that you apply for a job undercover and go through the interview process. And I thought he was joking, but he really wasn't. And I wound up doing it and applied. I got an interview and I went through the actual process and I'm a real big Disney guy, and to see how they attract people, employees, how they train them, how they retain them. I mean, if you've ever been to Disney before, you know that the place is literally spotless. And they have people working there. They call them cast members, not employees. They call them cast members because, you know, they're on stage. You know, they're producing something. So, you know, they have these people paying a minimum wage, and they, you know, I mean, to use the Disney phrase, they whistle while they work. I mean, they're happy. They're greeting the guests. They're keeping everything clean. And I was like, how do they do that? And once I went down there and saw how they ingrain their culture in them first. You know, they start off kind of, you know, like with the book, you know, what's your, you know, start with why. You know, you learn why they're so successful at first, and they just really just instill that in you. Zappos is the same way. They instill that culture in you. And I really got a whole lot out of it. And there's, I mean, you don't have to go apply for a job there. There's plenty of books and resources that you could read. But it was a really cool experience, and I'm really glad that I did it.
Yeah, I'm thinking we probably have the mutual networking event, you know, with a friend named Dan, if I had to guess.
Dan Kennedy?
He would be the one.
Yeah, actually, that was the meeting I was going to, and I was one of the Marketer of the Year finalists, so I spoke at that meeting.
Oh, nice.
That was back in like 2013, I believe, or 2014. So, yeah, and Dan really liked, because I was a Marketer of the Year finalist, I was able to do a mastermind with him at Disney. So, that was really cool telling him, cause he's a big Disney guy, telling him about all of the stuff that I did and learned. So he really liked that.
Oh, so you did that before the Dan Kennedy thing?
That was at the same time.
Gotcha. Yeah. That's pretty cool. Yeah, I had a suspicion, you know, Dan has opened the door for many, many, many dentists, doctors, professionals. That's pretty cool. Kind of come full circle a little bit. So let's see here. Let's see how we can, you know, most of the people listening to my show here, Jeff, are real estate investors. They're flipping houses. We get a lot of real estate agents who are professionals, you know, in their own business, pretty much having to figure out how to pay the taxes, set up their tax strategy, come up with their retirement plan if they ever want to, invest in deals, all the stuff we were touching on today. It's important to them. But knowing that the audience is full of mostly, we get, you know, some multifamily syndicators, but a lot of, you know, residential real estate investors in one shape or another in our audience. So knowing that's the audience, is there a book or two? It doesn't have to be real estate related at all. Either that was impactful and sort of changed your life and your paradigm as you were, you know, coming through this journey, or whether you think might be pertinent for people who are listening to the show.
There's a lot of them, and I'll try to keep it a short list. One of the books that I'm going to kind of go through this in categories. I would say with the mindset, with something that really changed my mindset was an older book, Napoleon Hill, Think and Grow Rich. So I think that was a really good book. As far as wealth building, you can't beat the classic, The Millionaire Next Door by Tom Stanley. That really opened my eyes to seeing that, hey, you don't have to make $1 million a year to be a millionaire. You know, all these people, the majority of them were making, weren't even making six figures. It was just their habits, their spending habits, they're constantly investing, just the way that they live their life, and all of them have the same different habits. So that was interesting. I think one of the books that got me interested and motivated about real estate is Rich Dad Poor Dad, Robert Kiyosaki. So I think the book that I just reread from Gary Keller or Keller Williams, The One Thing. When I originally read it in 2013, when it came out, I did not know what my one thing was. But now that I reread it and it really resonated with me, because I really know what my one thing is now. And that book really helped me to take all the different priorities and really prioritize the priorities and, you know, knocking over that lead domino first. And then once you knock that over, it just kind of lines up and momentum starts growing.
Nice. Yeah. Great recommendations. It's funny. Gary Keller, I was listening to like a podcast. I think he was on the Tim Ferriss show. So it was a very rare public appearance for Gary Keller. He's Keller Williams for anybody that's listening that didn't put two and two together. Gary's founder of Keller Williams. And he was touching on the one thing. He's saying the one thing is his mindset, it's his philosophy. You know, what's the one thing I can do with my wife when I come in the door, that's going to make everything else irrelevant after that? Oh, I could, you know, hug her and give her a kiss and tell her she's important and I love her. And what's the one thing I can do, you know, in my business that, like, if this one thing comes through, I can, you know, everything else sort of becomes irrelevant. It's not going to be like quite as important because I get this one thing right. And like, maybe, you know, for some of us, it's different things. You would have to fill that in. What's the one thing, you know, I could do to make the dog happy when he walks in and the dog wants a hug and all that? And his mindset description was that of being able to prioritize in life. And I feel like for me, over the last, you know, 5 years, I've gotten better at that. And I have a nightly ritual of taking my notebook, which doesn't have – it's not one of those, like, framed out ones you get from, you know, certain people that have, like, write your goals here, do this other thing there. It's just a lined notebook. And each night as I'm like planning my next day, I sit down, I write the date. My number one thing is thank God. And then number two, and I might make a list of between, you know, three, and five or maybe six items there, but I have this art of like figuring out kind of like what's the one thing. It's like priority thinking, if you will. And the better I've gotten at that, I make sure that really important thing, that really impactful thing that's going to move the needle, that one thing, as Gary Keller says in that book, that I could do that following day. The better I've gotten at that priority thinking and setting the priorities, the more we've moved the needle as a company, and the more we've moved, you know, tons of different things I've applied that thinking to in my life. But the ability to think in you know, in terms of priority and making sure I'm investing my time the same way that I'm investing my money for that return, has really been eye opening. So I could credit that to the Gary Keller one thing philosophy and mindset. Cool. So Dr. Jeff, if you could go back when you were 18 years old, I assume you were about that age as you were graduating high school. So you were young and maybe you already made the decision. You're probably committed to go to school. But what would be the crown jewel of wisdom you would share with yourself before you even went into college?
At the time I had a pretty large lawn service. So I was used to running my own business, and I wound up doing that through college as well. But I really wish I would have started at least learning a little bit about real estate and just finding some people, maybe taking some classes at college or just finding some people in the area. Looking back, I had some friends that their dads had a lot of real estate, and they still do here in my area. But just maybe gotten a job there, just been exposed to it, just to see whether I liked it or not, or just to start to learn it a little bit, because I was just so focused on, you know, going to college and then, you know, going to dental school, and I kind of blocked everything else out, and I didn't have more of an open mind of the different things out there. So that's probably the advice that I would give my 18-year-old self.
Yeah, I think that's great advice. And if there was like an 18-year-old listening to the podcast, they probably already decided that they wanted a little bit of exposure to real estate. But I look at my daughter, who's 18, and she's committed to Temple, and she's going to school to be a nurse starting in the fall. And she doesn't want to hear anything her dad's doing. You know, she's not like reading Rich Dad, Poor Dad. It's sitting on her, you know, on her dresser in there. And we're like, hopefully someday she'll come back around, probably 6 or 8 years later, once she starts working and realize that, oh, this is, you know, this job wasn't quite the magic pill I thought it was going to be when I was heading on into college. Maybe there's more. Maybe that's why you and I both, Jeff, enjoy so much talking about this stuff, because it's been so eye opening and life changing for us both. So do you have a website, URL, some place people should go to get in touch with you or some more information about what you're up to?
Yeah, there's two things. They could email me, Jeff, J-F-F, at debtfreedr.com, or they could go to the website, and that's simply debtfreedr.com.
Nice. Well, hey, I really appreciate you taking the time, blocking out the distractions, being disciplined to allocate some of that precious, valuable time with us here on the REI Diamond Show today, Jeff. I appreciate it.
Yeah, I really appreciate the time as well, and it's always fun doing these interviews with you and other people that have these great, informative podcasts. So thanks for all you do for your community as well.
And thank you for tuning in to this episode of the REI Diamond Show. Coming up next, I've invited Travis Watts of Ashcroft Capital to share his perspective on selecting the best passive multifamily real estate investments. Certainly, the idea of truly passive investments is alluring. You'll hear the process Travis worked through to convert his active real estate portfolio into a passive, hands-off portfolio. Now, the reason I do this podcast is the opportunity to have successful real estate investors, service providers, other business professionals share an uninterrupted hour with us in deep discussion here on the show. These hour-long episodes have been one of my personal most powerful sources of business, economic, and real estate information, thoughts, and mindset. the same information that has helped my team and I build multi-million dollars in profit year after year flipping houses. And without you, the loyal listener of the REI Diamond Show, none of the guests will be willing to attend, willing to block out that time, or willing to share their wisdom with me and with you here on the show. So in closing, please know that I am grateful for you. Thank you for continuing to tune into the show. It has made all the difference for me and my team. I hope you also find value in the show and then convert that value into cold, hard cash like we have been blessed to do. Until next time, my friend, stay safe, stay healthy, and close more deals.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the REI Diamonds Show with Dan Breslin. To receive email notifications of new weekly episodes, sign up at www.reidiamonds.com.